This is Wise Men Say. I'm Stephen Goldsmith. Unlike any of you lot that couldn't catch the game on Saturday, I want to be educated on perhaps the most predictable 0-0 of all time, or since Crystal Palace last year, who had the same manager as West Brom this year. Is that right?
Yeah.
I wasn't at the game and didn't have any access to it at all. So the educators are coming in the shape of Northern Echo's Richard Mason. Long time since you've joined us, Richard. Seems like it anyway.
I feel I've been kind of subjected to some kind of ban. I don't know what I've done.
I know. Perhaps we're too friendly and we take you for granted as a guest.
Or someone's pulled out at the last minute today, possibly.
I don't know. Gareth Bookjay, you'll have to answer that one.
It was planned because Richard complained he hadn't been on in a while. I just feel bad sometimes, you know, dragging you all the way from down there up here. But, you know.
Down there.
I'll bear it in mind next time that you're not that bothered. So.
We Are Wearside is represented on the podcast for the first time also. Paul Maughan, we welcome into our studio. I'm sure there's still plenty for you to say, Paul, even off the back of a 0-0. I'm sure I'll
find plenty. I think I'm known as the site's resident Morny so-and-so, so I'm sure I'll get plenty to say.
Gob poo. Can you say that?
You can't swear, really.
We'll just try and rise above it. You can't. Go on.
No.
Drop the F-bomb.
No. Fudge, an idiot. No, I'm not going to... There's no swearing. It's a family show.
A family show.
Save it for the live shows. It's like Hollyoaks.
Yeah.
Yeah, after dark. Yeah. But maybe we should do that. Can't speak. WMS. After dark. Mm. What would that involve? What would the storyline be?
Lots of alcohol, anyway. Well, there is anyway.
What would you have done?
I don't know where to go, to be honest.
A plot to burn down Pizzazz. No, something don't. Like that, and...
Don't make claims like that, please, on air.
I'm coming up with a plot for
right.
the after dark thing.
Right, okay. Well, we're talking of plots. We'll hear about the plot of the game on Saturday. Damn, gone. Mate. From Gus.
Tony Pulis is a genius of setting up a team and making it very difficult to beat. There is no other like him. So we knew we needed something to happen. A corner, a decision. And we've done enough to make the referee make the right decision, and for some reason he didn't. So it's a shame, because I thought we were the better team and we needed to win the game. A new way, as you saw, new way of playing. I thought the fans liked it. I thought the players they gave everything. You know, a new way of thinking. So I'm gonna analyze the game and think for the future. I think in the beginning of the game, yeah, the idea was simple. Let's not put ourselves in any kind of problem. But when we settled down, we passed the ball well, and we tried to switch the ball and get the wide players on the ball. Then we took a risk as well. We went with, I don't know, the which kind of formation, because I don't think you can define how many players we had on the pitch trying to attack the ball. And even at the end, because Anthony was looking very bright going forward, you know, to put Patrick to have a left foot as well, just trying to find that break. I don't know. Sometimes I think that there are games that are written in history. You know, it was a 0-0 all the way. We're going to be last team and match of the day tonight. And we keep moving forward. It was a very, very experienced team today on the pitch. I'm not saying old. I'm saying experienced. There were players that they know how to take responsibilities, players that they play at the highest level, in big teams as well, like Ricky. So we had men. And that was the idea. And I think we got well with all the pressure, the nerves, or whatever it was called. But we needed that break. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be, but I got nothing to say about the way and the effort that we played today.
OK, Gareth, tell me this new style we've stumbled upon, what Gus was talking about there.
It's just 4-4-2. That was it.
Really?
It wasn't really...
Because you said we found a new way of playing, but after the QPR game, you sort of bemoaned the fact that the players went a little bit more direct and had a little bit more urgency in the game almost, didn't he? And that was, well, obviously where the comments came after that.
It wasn't direct. It was...
I didn't think it was against QPR, to be fair.
They got up the pitch. There was times in the second half where, you know, Wes Brown was the furthest player back and he was inside their half. So they certainly pushed up more. It was the kind of game that you could probably get away with playing the 4-4-2 because... they sort of played that way and they weren't really interested in doing anything other than sitting in for a point. It might have been interesting if Sunderland had scored and then they had to change and come out and how maybe Poyet would have coped with that reaction, but obviously that didn't happen, even though it should have with the Johnson goal that was disallowed.
We often mock the 4-4-2 on here, Richard. How was it?
I never mock it. I always
mock's probably strong. It does work in some cases.
I agree that, you know, it can be problematic, especially when you're playing straight lines, and that's especially how Sunderland used to under O'Neill towards the end. Certainly, they'd play in straight lines, and no one would get in between them. But it felt more like kind of a back to basics performance. I don't think the formation really mattered. I think it was just a case of kind of taking everything in stock and
you can't get bogged down sometimes in formations.
Yeah, I think it was just kind of a let's start again, and they did the same against Palace earlier on in the season. That was after the Arsenal game. It was after the Southampton defeat, and they kind of went back to basics and kind of started again. And that's kind of the default position.
First home game against Newcastle, he did that also, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
He called back and cut them all and set them midfield. Pretty much a 4-4-2.
The reasons they gave for that selection in that game, bringing, because he brought Bardsley in as well, and he had Catamol in for that game. Yeah,
Key was on the bench.
Yeah, and he said we needed winners, we needed men in the team, and it's the same kind of thing he said yesterday, was that they needed men in there, and I think, you know, O'Shea and Brown at the back gave that little bit of solidity. I think they both played pretty well. It was as good as a partnership I've seen between them in a long time.
Okay, as I say, I wasn't there, so I'm guessing Paul Lee Cattermole was important to that as well.
Yeah, Cattermole was spot on when he came back. He gave the ball away a couple of times, as is his style at times. However, he drives us on a bit better, he pushes us forward, he's got a bit more purpose than the likes of Brickwood and Gomez, and he helps Larson as well. Larson looks a lot better, in my opinion, when he's next to Cattermole, and I thought we were better for it. I don't think we were brilliant on Saturday. I agree with Gareth that it was probably a good game to play 4-4-2 in, and that West Brom didn't really have any intention of trying to score at all, so we had time to do that, to use that fine, but it was improvement.
Larson fair of Cattermole, Gareth?
I thought he was good. I heard a few people say that they didn't think Larson was his best game, but I thought he was pretty good. He's been good all year. I mean, Cattermole, he's the catalyst, isn't he, for everything for Sunderland? And I don't think that was any... there was no evidence to suggest otherwise at the weekend. Alvarez was a little bit disappointing. He kept on trying to come inside all the time. He wanted to go almost like replicate that goal that he scored against Fulham. He kept on wanting to do that, and a few times you just wanted him to...
Up against better defenders.
Yeah, go down the outside. But, I mean, there was some strange selections for them. I mean, Craig Gardner was playing left midfield, and I've never seen him play left midfield in my life for Sunderland. Well, barely saw him play football for Sunderland, even when he was on the pitch. But from the left, I mean, that was an area to be exploited. But I think their fullback selection was interesting. I'm not sure if Van Aanholt might have had a little bit of a knock.
I was wondering about that when I saw the team selection.
But I think he might have, or he wasn't fully fit. Maybe he didn't train or something in the week, but. It was very very clear that he played those two defensive fullbacks rather than the attacking ones, because he needed that protection from having the two out and out wingers and the two centre midfielders, and that gave him the support.
That's probably the likely scenario.
But at times, I mean, Revier got, like Gus said in the audio, Revier got forward, you know, from the left. I mean, Revier just plays wherever you ask him to, it seems, in either fullback position, and his level of ability doesn't drop. Obviously, he's restricted with his left foot compared to his right foot, but it's not ridiculously noticeable. Virginie did okay, but it was all about being on the front foot for most of the game. But they just couldn't break through. Similar, to, well, it was practically a carbon copy of the Palace game last season under Pulis.
More on Alvarez there, Richard. People have been suggesting he just needs a run of games. The quality isn't in doubt. Are we going to see the best from him, do you think? I'm a little bit worried about this alleged agreement that we sign him if we stay up, if I'm being honest, for the figures being mentioned.
Especially hearing kind of the hoots of celebration from the Italian side of things, kind of upon learning that. I think they seem very happy. He hasn't had a good run in any team for a while, and he's always been a streaky player. I mean, we at the Echo, we spoke to Kristen Hennage before Alvarez signed, And he kind of told us what...
Don't listen to Kristen.
Yeah. he knows a little bit more than I do about...
Yeah, me too.
He knows more than everything, on everything, than everyone.
Yeah. He's a...
World football sage, that's what we call him.
Football sage.
Yeah.
Like that. Anyway, he was very kind of... He's good on his day, but it doesn't come around enough. And as a winger, you'd expect him to be a little bit streaky, but... I don't know whether a team like Sunderland, with all the respect in the world, I don't think a team like Sunderland could carry him on the games that he's not so good.
Interesting one that, Paul, isn't it? Gareth mentioned there his performance against Fulham. You just hope he isn't sort of at the end of that game thought, yes, I'm back. This is me, this is what I'm all about. You're playing against better players on the Premier League.
Yeah, I've been a bit unimpressed with him, to be honest. I think he was canny in the second half against Fulham. Otherwise, I think he's, as Richard says, you expect wingers to be a bit streaky and a bit hit and miss. However, I haven't really seen anything he's done in the Premier League. I would love Jacquarini to maybe come in and try and take our role, but Jacquarini's, I think it's the end of the day, he's going to see a specialist, so obviously that's a bit of an issue. And I wouldn't be hanging out hopes on Alvarez like a lot of fans, I think, are, but I don't. I've lost my faith in Johnson.
Because you've got a trick in him, isn't he? So yeah, someone like that, people get excited.
Sometimes players take a year, though, don't they, to settle?
Yeah, well...
See it often.
Do you want to spend €9 million on a player?
Certainly not. I'm just trying to find the positives in the situation.
No, I don't think it's fair to, like, dig him out completely. I mean, like Richard saying, I think streaky is the word, and let's hope that if he plays next week at Old Trafford, and then the following week, the following Tuesday, or whatever it is, at Hull, if he plays... Let's hope he has a good game in one of his good games and that, and does something. Like for a player like Alvarez, I think Old Trafford's probably a nice stage for him. You know, it's the kind of game where he might think, oh, I'm gonna turn up in this one, and it's Old Trafford. You know, he might do something. I mean, that's more hope on my part, but you're definitely gonna have more space to play in when you get the ball back against Manchester United. And defensively, they aren't probably worse than West Brom. Well, I would say that defensively is a team that they definitely are worse than West Brom under Pulis. So, you know, he might be looking ahead to that as a game where he can...
Do you think he's going to continue with his setup and formation?
I think if we did, I would like to see him try and swap over Johnson and Alvarez, because I think Johnson's best on the right, cutting in. I think that's what Johnson's all about. And I've not really been impressed by Alvarez on the right, but I'd like to see him go down the left and try and
go on the outside,
in, rather than feeling like he's got to cut in all the time. And maybe if we can try and mix up that. We tried it, I think, about 55 minutes, you could see.
They switched
them over, but I think Alvarez was only on for another 10 minutes or so. So it'd be nice to see if we start a match in the system again with them two swapping wings.
Adam Johnson, productive again, Richard?
He did a lot. He saw a lot of the ball. I mean, both wingers saw a lot of the ball. It just seemed to be... It's a confidence thing with the pair of them, with both Alvarez and Johnson, is that there was a split second of hesitation, and taking a touch, letting it roll away, and by then, the chance to hit a first-time ball or fizzed across the area had gone. I noticed Johnson did win a lot of corners, and they did put a lot of crosses in. And for a team that...
That's why I was interested when I saw the stats. I saw the stats, and I go back to Gus after that QPR game and said, this is what the fans want, the players forcing corners and stuff, I don't like it. And then that's what game it seemed to be, kind of game it seemed to be a little bit.
The quality in the delivery was... I mean, Larson was disappointing from that perspective. You expect a little bit better from him from set pieces as well. I mean, Johnson's notorious for overhitting everything. He always seems to clear the back post with, the vast majority of his deliveries.
Apart from at Bradford.
What?
He didn't overhit at Bradford.
No, he didn't. He quite... He was barely hit it. But, I think it's going to be... I mean, obviously we'll preview the Man United game on Into the Light, which you can subscribe to and listen every Thursday night. If you don't already, what have you been doing? I think it's going to be an interesting one, because we've gone going backwards in previous games where there's been a lot of talk, both from Poyet and supporters as well, about playing certain ways in certain games. And I know there's an argument for consistency or whatever, but I'd be a little bit apprehensive of going to Old Trafford and setting up the same way as we did I imagine he'd probably go to the similar setup to what he did against.
Was Jack Bardwell on the bench, or is he still off?
No, he's not. Wasn't available. Wasn't fit. Calf issue.
Hmm.
Buckley. There was a video. I don't know if you saw a video today that was doing the rounds of the under-8s playing the first team. It's quite good. Obviously, some little silly feature on the YouTube channel, but Buckley was there, so maybe Buckley's back involved this week. Because he's been out with a knee
problem. Maybe he's been relegated to the under-8s.
How do you get
I feel a bit sorry. Yeah. I feel a bit sorry.
Not training with
him.
The youth, you're training with the under-8s.
Everyone's always like asking, like, obviously Gus about injuries in the week. He says, Jack Reaney going to be back? Is Rodwell going to be back? But no one ever asks if Buckley's going to be back.
Pops his head around the door. I'm all right, by the way.
Yeah, he's like, Gus is like, no.
With the broom in his hand.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Cool lad.
Probably working down at the beach house.
Yeah, he might be, huh? Right. But anyway, enough of that, slag enough, Buckley, move on.
Danny Graham, I heard positive things about Paul.
He'd done okay.
Hesitation suggests.
I thought he was fine, he didn't do anything wrong, and he's better than what Fletcher's been lately. When he got substituted, he got a round of applause as if he scored a hat trick. It was the whole stadium kind of united and won, and I was a bit taken aback.
Probably not just because of all he's been through and everything.
And he's an improvement on Fletcher. Would like to have seen if he would have scored when he got put through in the first minute rather than being hauled down. I don't think he looked too threatening. I would probably be wanting, if we're going to go two up front, I would be erring on the side of Wickham starting ahead of the four. I'm not Wickham's biggest fan, but I think out of the three of them, he's the best one to partner the four.
I thought he did
okay, and if he got in terms of kind of improvement, he has come along a bit. There was a moment just before half time where there was a kind of a hopeful ball hit, didn't seem to be aiming for anyone, and he kind of bust a gut to get on the end of it, headed it, kind of cushioned it back. And
fans always going to love that, aren't
they? Yeah, it was just a bit of, you know, it was maybe a bit of wasted energy, but it was kind of showed that he was a little bit sharper. It kind of showed to me that he's not the kind of immobile player that has been in the past.
But you've been pushing from Gareth, haven't you, anyway?
I just think he's earned his chance. I think his partnership with Defoe, he's looked the best out of the two, and he did on Saturday. The link up play between them was pretty good. And you know, they looked comfortable together, they read each other quite well. So I think Defoe had an okay game. I think the limitations of Defoe's game, you know, definitely stand out when he's got the ball at his feet, and he wastes it quite a lot. But I guess you don't have him in the team for that day. So you're going to have somebody up there who's willing to hold it and do the dirty work. And Graham, out of the three of them, the other ones, he's probably the most, you know, he's the most viable option at the moment. I think if he goes to the traditional Poyet system at Old Trafford and plays like the 4-3-3 with a striker from the left, then I imagine it'll be Wickham who comes in that instance. But that's just a system thing. I wouldn't say that Graham's been dropped. I would just say that's a accommodation thing, and that's something we should be doing anyway. You know, we should be changing the way we play game to game, and it's what some supporters have asked for, and it's what Poyet's been striving for, and it will be interesting to see if he does that next week.
How far has Fletcher fallen down the pecking order, Richard, now? It's a strange one for me, because I've always liked Stephen Fletcher, and there's something not right.
There's something not right, and I think Gareth mentioned in previous editions that he's been getting away with it quite a lot. He hasn't been getting any.
So you do listen to all the editions, then?
Well, you know, I have them lying around on hard copy. No, it is as if he has kind of escaped a lot of the criticism that seemed to come Wickham's way, and seemed to come Graham's way, and that he never, you know, they say, oh, he's a goal scorer, but when he has been presented with those chances, he hasn't always converted them. And as a substitute, I don't think he did enough on Saturday to stake any kind of claim. I don't know how well he'll train
people
this week.
People say the same about Wickham, don't they? Defoe's going to start the majority of games, you think, and there's a chance now for these other three forwards to really stake a claim, and it's not sounding like any of them are grabbing the opportunity.
Wickham and Fletcher came on at the same time on Saturday, and Wickham looked like looked like he was playing a game of football, whereas I didn't see Fletcher until possibly the last 5 minutes. Even then, probably in the injury time. And I don't know.
Do you think he needs a cuddle?
Might just need another hair transplant. Maybe, yeah. Maybe with that. I don't
low
know.
Blow.
Well, it's not nothing wrong with that.
Not a low blow. He's got the money to do it. He can
yeah,
do
yeah,
it.
Well, yeah, okay.
It's, I think that Simpsons, you know, when Homer gets a hair transplant and he gets it from Snake, who's the resident.
Oh yeah, resident takes thief, him over
and he takes over his yeah, personality. Yeah. Maybe he's had a hair transplant from someone who's not actually a footballer, and therefore yeah.
Maybe you should get like a hair transplant with like Ronaldo or something exactly. like that. That's yeah.
or really hirsute footballer who's got hair to spare.
Mm. Valderrama,
Colaccini.
David
no,
Luiz.
No. Yeah. What did you think of the substitutions in general? Because I was surprised. I don't understand why he kept a 4-1 because you know he's most likely to take a chance if it falls. But I thought he might have left Graham on and taken Defoe off when he made that change. And when I think like Craig did a bit today, for the Echo, and he was saying that he thought they managed to keep the system. Keep the shape with the three strikers on, but I thought it went a little bit ragged. I thought it was not desperate, but I wouldn't go as far to say it was like when Bruce just used to chuck loads of strikers on and hope something happens. He's done well again, hasn't he, by the way? That he's signed some random bloke. He'll have a month of form and then he'll sell him in the summer and buy a different one. But anyway, I thought it was a little bit dysfunctional. But you can understand. He's trying to affect the game in a positive fashion, which is what people have asked for. So, and I think the crowd generally were pretty, positive all the way through the game and encouraged them on. But as I say, going back to the substitution, I don't know what you guys thought about that.
I thought it was a positive one. Certainly thought it was a positive. Like bringing on two strikers felt a bit kind of Mick McCarthy-esque almost, because they used to do that, change of strikers.
Don't mix them with McCarthy.
60th minute in every
game.
Used to have
four, didn't he, just pair them up differently
yeah.
every week.
Yeah. It felt a bit similar to that, other than the fact that three strikers were on the pitch at that point. So, I don't think it was as ragged as, because I could see that Wickham had moved into Alvarez's role, and it wasn't exactly a massive change of shape. But I think the reason to keep Defoe on was probably just if there's any bits and pieces to pick up, Defoe was probably the most likely out of the lot to score from them.
It's interesting that crowd stayed on side then. Do you think that was down to Gus's letter? Because the way things have been going lately, you would have thought a 0-0 draw at home West Brom, you might have heard the odd boo ringing around the stadium.
I thought it would have been a lot more
hostile.
Yeah, I think that's the word. And it was really good, it was spot on. I was down Bradford last week and I thought it was really bad down Bradford. I thought that was, I didn't particularly want him to go, but I thought that would be the end of Poirier. Yeah. Not for a while, I was saying he managed to get that kind of abuse, and I didn't think he'd see the week out, so it was good that he did. And the crowd was spot on Saturday. I thought it was
down to his letter writing skills.
Yeah,
that,
yeah. Well, his letter writing skills,
his judgment,
criticised for his grammar and punctuation.
Wow, write a letter some in Uruguayan.
No, some people
don't speak Uruguayan.
Some people twist on 21, as they say. But anyway,
what was there? Did the crowd reaction, was it helped by an early decision to get on the referee's back, so he sort of has the brunt of the abuse kind of thing? He's the focal point for the fans' frustration almost.
Yeah, that almost kind of galvanised it. Like kind of, and Poyet spoke about kind of there being a reconnection between the fans and the fans and the team, and I think that was kind of siege mentality kind of thing. We're all in this together attitude.
Us versus them.
It was helped by the fact that the referee dropped a clanger in the first minute and was pretty poor thereafter. I think
managers could almost sort of bribe the referees into doing that, kind of give dodgy decision early on and get the crowd on your back.
They don't have to put much money aside to make referees.
Yeah, just get Kevin Friend to do it. Well, we'll hear from Gus on the referee decisions now.
We needed something. From the point of view of the performance, the desire, pushing, risking and going forward, everything was spot on. Then you need a break. A break can be a lucky goal, a great action, a great shot, or a decision. Today, the great goal, we couldn't score it. The lucky one, we couldn't score it. Then you needed the decisions, the main decision from the referee to go the right way. I'm not saying my way, just the right way, because I thought it was clear, it was easy. He was not giving the free kick, which is disappointing already. So then, if the linesman gave the free kick, I think it was the linesman the one he needed to call if it was a red or not, and not him. So I thought he got caught in two decisions. The first one, he didn't make it. The last one made it, and it was right. And the second one, the one he made, it was the wrong one. So poor in that aspect. And then the goal. Look, I'm honest. It would not be very easy for me to come out here and say that we didn't win because of the referee or whatever. Yes, it's onside, Jono. I watched it 20 times. You stop, and yes, it's onside. It's a tough one. You know, I understand that the referees are human beings, and the linesman from 40 yards, the ball flying when he looks, Jono is 2 yards behind, perfect run. He can give it the upside. I take that one. It hurts because it was a goal, but I take it. But the first one, no. The third one was a straightforward red card, and I don't think it's...
Referee any... wrong on both counts, gentlemen?
Yeah, I think he was wrong on both counts. I didn't know at the match that it was the goal was onside, so I can understand that decision. I mean, I said it during the pitch, to be fair, but
was the linesman on the side where Defoe would have been blocking his view?
I think he gave it on Johnson. It wasn't anything to do with Defoe, so we just get like
no, but it might have distorted his view a little bit. I think
the flag went up the second Johnson had the ball, so I don't know if he's seen Defoe and he's just his flag, his arms automatically gone up.
Yeah, you don't know, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because down our end, a lot of people didn't even like realise straight away, and it went up quick.
I mean, like you say, it's a difficult one, isn't it? That one, and you understand that sometimes they go your way and sometimes they don't. But it's the first one that compounds it. I know there's been people saying, by the letter of the law, it's not a sending off.
We're due a break, aren't we? This is really cliched what I'm going to say now, but people say it evens itself out, and we've had the whole game. We've had that. We should have had a penalty at Bradford.
If it had been a Sunderland player in that position and they didn't get sent off, you'd be thinking, "Phew, got away with that one."
Absolutely.
And that's the thing. I think sometimes you can get. It's going to sound stupid, but sometimes you can get bogged down in the intricacies of the laws of the game.
That sounds stupid.
Yeah, because in a split second he's got a decision to make and what something looks like. And I know a lot of people were saying, well, the ball had run away from Graham and he probably wasn't going to get the ball. But then you're given the decision on that possibility that he isn't going to get it. But he's being pulled back, according to the referee. Or the linesman in this case.
Yeah, and then, doesn't matter how soft it is if you get the decision.
And then what you're looking at is it's Lescott's intention. So Lescott's been done by Graham, and he's panicked in that situation and pulled him back. Now, because it was a little tug, I think it makes it easier for him to give the yellow. If he'd done what Wes Brown did against Hull last season and absolutely obliterated Shane Long like he did, do you think he would have... given a yellow card or a red card in that situation? I think he would have given a red card. Exactly, you shouldn't. So this is what I'm talking about. I mean, I was saying, speaking to Andy Dawes on Twitter about this, another person who comes on here sometimes, and he was saying, well, these are the laws of the game. I was kind of saying, well, I just think it's a professional foul, which apparently is not a red card offence. It's a denying a clear goal scoring opportunity now. It's a professional foul. It's just cheating.
Cynical.
It's cynical. And he's only done it because of the situation he's found himself in. He doesn't know the ball's running through to Foster. He's reacted to try and stop him from scoring in that situation. So I think the gut instinct there, straight away, I think everyone was going red, red, red. He just felt as though it had to be. But then, like you say, some of the decisions we've had recently haven't exactly gone our way. And I know people say, well, you can't blame decisions. You got to do more in a game. But at the same time, if they keep going against you, like the penalty at Bradford, the handballs against Hull, those are three, and the game on Saturday, three massive games, and we've been denied opportunities to be in those games in a big way by, you know, bad refereeing. So I think Poyet was pretty fair, I thought, actually, there, especially with the linesman.
He hasn't gone all Mourinho, has he?
I tell you what, though.
And suggested there's a conspiracy theory.
Tony Pulis said one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard anybody say in my life as well, so which was something like, I've seen old women, we walked past him and he said it, and me and Mike were like laughing our heads off, and then he said it again in the post-match upstairs.
Well, remind us what it was.
It was something like, I've seen old ladies hit harder in the street and stay on their feet. I was thinking, like, where on earth do you live, mate? Like, where old women get attacked on the street. I mean, I know he's lived in Stoke for a long period of his life. So God knows what goes on there. But yeah, it's just what a strange thing to say. And then he also said that he didn't know what the offside rule was or something as well.
Right. He did say something similar when David Myler was fouled by Huth. Was that four years ago?
Yeah, the red card. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said something similar afterwards, which, in the context of things, was pretty silly because Myler had just come back from the second of a pretty bad knee injuries and didn't go very well.
He actually did the same thing in a way, because he I don't know who the lad is, about Graham, like, dismissively, because he was he did it with Myler. He was like, I don't know the lad's name.
Myler or Myler, however you say it or something.
And then he did it with Graham. He was like, I don't know who the lad is, but he's like gone down this way. And I was thinking, like, you're preparing for a game all week and you don't know the players that you're playing against.
Of course he knows who he
is. It's just disrespectful. Like, I mean, I've said this in the week. I mean, I know it's like, yeah, he gets results and all that, but dear me, like, imagine watching that. Like,
it's
every
week.
It's only away
from home he does that, though, isn't it? I don't think I know a manager who contrasts home and away.
Is it away fan if you go, if you're spending all that money to go away?
I agree with him. Because I've said to you before, I think Pulis is a manager Sunderland fans want but don't know it. They'll probably turn their nose up at it. At home, I think, watching his teams at home, because he's moved on a bit from Stoke, I think he's evolved a little bit, and Crystal Palace and West Brom. When you watch those teams at home, you know, it is quite a high tempo, and I think the stadium would appreciate that. But the polarising sort of approaches in the away games, as Gareth said, is bizarre, where he goes and it doesn't matter who he plays almost. It's like, just set up, don't lose this, whatever. Yeah. And I mean, Poyd can get defensive, but not like that.
You know, there's games where I've seen Pulis manage. I covered a couple last season when he came up with Palace, and it's games when I think, well, he could win this. Why is he not even trying? Like, 60, and even on Saturday, 60 minutes, Foster claims the ball and then goes down for a couple of minutes because he reckons he's being fouled, and it's just like the time waste and the changing sides on the goal kicks, and it's like they're going for the draw. You've got half an hour, and you've got a player like Berahino, you've got players who can hit you on the break, or they've got quality, and surely they could put more of a challenge.
They would, but why is it so different away from home? It's bizarre, isn't it?
It's taken sort of pragmatism
to new levels, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember I've seen a Pulis side play. I think they had at one point they had eight defenders on the pitch. They had two defensive midfielders who were also defenders. They had four defenders, and they had a defender playing up front. It was completely kind of unbelievably negative. Yeah, he's a results manager, so he'll deliver a result. A point away from home, in his eyes, will be a good thing. At the end of the season, when they've got 36, 37 points and they stay up, or even more, he'll think that's a job well done. So it doesn't really matter what happens during those games to him. All that matters is that point.
Gets to the point where you want to be doing more than just surviving grimly. That's the thing, isn't it? That's, as you're saying, he's hit a glass ceiling, and he has with Stoke. I mean, he done well at Stoke. He done very well. He does very well at what he does, but in terms of trying to expand the way he plays and the way he progresses, he can't really do it. He doesn't bring anybody through from you. He doesn't change his style of play. And I know at Stoke he kept trying to sign, every year he seemed to sign a flair player, like Tunkai 1 year, and then I can't remember.
He tried to change his Stoke and he couldn't. He kept going back to his normal route.
I mean, Palacios was an excellent player at Tottenham, signed him, and that was the end of his career when he went to Stoke. Like you say, Tunchai, great example of a player who looked very good, but he just doesn't know how to use him in games, and that's his downfall. You know, he's probably comfortable in his own skin, so to speak, with results. And I thought, you know, Palace looked a lot better last season than he did at Stoke, but I don't know, they look great against West Ham. I mean, West Ham are a good team.
That's what I'm saying.
Why couldn't you do that to a team away from
home? I don't know why he takes that approach. But also
on the subject of him having to pop at people for going down easy and being soft and all that, like Richard says, like Foster rolling around the floor for no apparent reason and all that. You know, you can't. You know, if you're going to do it yourself, you can't twist about other people cheating.
He knows what to say. That's all, doesn't he? They know how to play the media, don't they? But talking about glass ceilings and stuff, we had a tweet from Peter Stamp, who says, in the last year, have we moved on at all is there real progress promising better future?
Well, it is a year next weekend that Sunderland went to the Capital One Cup final. So I suppose it is a good kind of benchmark to say how far have they.
And we were in the relegation zone most of last season as well. People tend to forget.
Yeah, I think the magnitude of what.
See, we haven't moved on when we haven't been in the relegation zone this year, have we? Is that right?
I don't think we have dabbled. But I mean, if you look at it that way, any one of the bottom ten could go down.
Mm. Oh yeah, I'm not suggesting we're safe by any means.
I'm not saying that Sunderland are in any particular danger right now.
But the thing is, we probably haven't progressed. You know, we haven't made leaps and bounds in a year anyway. But I guess the point is, if you then were to get rid of your manager, then the next year is going to be the same again, isn't it? So you're never going to get out of that, are you?
No. I think Poyet acknowledged the point, though, that they haven't progressed as he'd like.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. Some of the, you know, been big debates about some of the stuff he's said or hasn't said or whatever the last few weeks. But you can't deny that he's got a vision. Whether or not he'll achieve it is another thing, but I like that bloody-mindedness, but I also like the fact that he's has changed and tried some different things to get the results in the short term.
One thing people can't accuse him of now is not trying to adapt, because every week now we're seeing something different on the pitch. He's trying to find a formula to work, isn't he?
Absolutely, I agree. Yeah. He is changing things and trying different things. I agree with Gareth now. I like the fact that he's got a philosophy. I like the fact that he's got an idea of how he wants us to play and where he wants us to go. I do worry that it's getting towards the end of the season, everyone panicking about relegation. I worry that Poirier is starting to do a bit of the reason he's changing every match is because he's trying to find something that works quickly rather than having faith in his own philosophy. His philosophy when he first came a year ago, we passed it about really, really well. We passed it about quickly. Those games where, even games where we didn't win, where I thought we knocked it about well. And this season we just seem a lot slower, a lot more. We don't seem to be taking the same risks and chances, which if you want to play that kind of passing system, I think you've sometimes got to take a risk that you're going to give the ball away in a dangerous position.
Mm-hmm. It's easy to forget that he's still a young manager. Yeah. He's still new to the
trade. First job in the Premier League.
Yeah, and maybe what worked at Brighton, which everyone seems to be holding up as some kind of blueprint that he should be following, maybe that's not going to work in the Premier League. Maybe he's tried that and he thinks, well,
and the fans have asked him to change, which most of the fans have asked him to change, and he's trying to. Yeah. You've got to give him the chance. He's brought it to four and he's playing two up front like most fans want. So this is new territory for him to try that. I said to Gareth at the time when he signed to four, we're going to see what kind of coach he is. We're going to see what he's made of here, because he's having to step outside of his comfort zone. But it's only fair you then give him a run of games to try and, I don't want to say stumble on something successful, but to try and find a solution.
A lot of kind of positive differences are stumbled upon just by chance. So it's not a case of Poyet kind of chucking a team out there and hoping something sticks. You know, if he keeps on trying something different each game, it might not be a case of chance, but something might just click.
It's trial and error.
A little partnership somewhere along the line might work, and it might be the catalyst for the whole team.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim Holmes tweeted saying, "We really struggle to create. How about playing Seb as a wide player in a 4-3-3? Must be better than Ricky." Not for me, Clive, for me. Or Jim.
No. I think because that's credit to him, though, because he's been so good that you'd feel as though you can't take him out of there. It's not because I don't think he could do a job.
And it's taken so long for him to find a role that really suits him, Larson, and I wouldn't want to put him anywhere else, to be honest.
People outside of seeing the club every week probably still see Larson as some kind of attacking right
which
midfielder,
which he isn't,
or an attacking midfielder in any case. I think his best work has been coming off the ball a lot of the time, and he does a lot of running and a lot of unseen stuff that he maybe not get the praise for. He's been doing and his kind of energy and intensity alongside Catamore has been part of the reason why Sunderland have played well.
I think he's been excellent this season. I think it will be a crime to take him out of midfield. I think centre midfield. I think he's been brilliant. I think he struggled there for about a year and a half.
Well, that's why I was worried when I saw the team selection before the game. I saw it was obviously a 4-4-2 because he really struggled in that 4-4-2 in the middle when we got overrun. He was a main reason for that because it was a new position for him. He found a place in a Poyet's three-man midfield. He sort of started excel at it, but by all accounts, he kept those performance levels up at the weekend. I mean, I wasn't there.
I thought he played really well.
Yeah, definitely. So delivery let him down a little bit, but You know, you can't deny
it. So he's had a tough education then, perhaps.
I don't think he's been... I think he's worked hard for quite a long time.
He's always worked hard. I've never doubted his work rate.
Yeah, but anyway. What else have we got? Michael Paul, that's quite a good one. Would be the top of the league if we'd signed Barini. #DoubleDay. Just wanted us to use the B word.
Doing so well there.
The interesting thing is, we're technically a better team without Barini because we haven't been in the bottom three yet this season. Whereas when we had Barini, we spent most of the season in the bottom three. So by that logic,
do you think now? You know, we're seeing the Poyet's changing the system, trial and error. He's trying to stumble on something that works. Because of the arrival of Jermaine Defoe, but perhaps he's only just got over Fabio Barini after all this time, and he finally feels like he can move
got
on.
Over him.
Yeah, he finally feels like he can move on. Let's change systems where we don't need that front left player.
Have they given his number away yet? Is the number 31 shirt being filled, or is that just going to be retired and hung on the walls
on Poyet's wall, yeah. office wall,
never to be filled again?
He's going to be the new Robbie Keane or the new Charles and Zogby, isn't he? No matter who the manager is of Sunderland, even when Poyet goes, invariably, which he will at some point, will always be linked with Barini every transfer window, and that's just going to be the way it is. But
it's like a reverse Robbie Keane, in that he will never play for Sunderland, but now Barini has played for Sunderland.
Yeah, he'll never play again,
but he'll just continue to be linked until he retires.
Yeah,
well, then he'll be linked as manager. Like that, who you can compare him to? Who we desperately wanted to keep but couldn't.
Well, Johnny Evans.
Given, 20 years ago, good shout.
Wouldn't pay £1 million for Shea Given.
I know.
So well, I guess we've moved on. We've moved on in that respect, I guess.
I know. I think a couple of tweets here from YI Misses, which kind of sums up the feeling or the lack of action in the game, perhaps. And we've asked for correspondence. He said, yeah, there were loads of seagulls flying around the stadium on Saturday. I felt like Tippi Hedren in The Birds. Thanks. I'm worried that this is a sign, like when a single crow means death and destruction.
I think just a gaggle of seagulls just means there's pasties that's been discarded or some
it's
sort of.
It's only a mile and a half from the course as well.
Is it that much? A bit closer, isn't it?
Is it? Mile or maybe? I don't know.
I haven't
got a yardstick on
it. Yeah. It's happened a few yardstick, I won't go and walk.
It's happened a few times recently where at a point in the game you just saw the seagulls of. Do you think that distracts you as you play? Are you thinking, I don't want to get defecated on from above?
That's so much that. One clearance, you could have the RSPB on your back. You know.
Well, there was that incident with Ashley Young, wasn't there, where a seagull did a poo in his mouth.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, dear. What a horrible thing. Speaking of pies...
You could make a vine with it, though.
You could do that. Couldn't you? That would be funny. Speaking of pies, there's the guy who won the prize. He gets a mention every week now. We just thought his name on Twitter is Dawson Pies, and I finally sought the T-shirt out from a contact the other day. And I said, "Oh, what's your real name?" And he was like, "Yeah, Dawson Pies. That's his name." So that's first name is Terrors Dawson Pies, and apparently it's pronounced peas. It's of German extraction, so. I told him that over here that pie and peas was a...
So no offence was meant when we were
popular,
talking about it. But Dawson's Pies was in the town, in the bridges, I'm sure. Can you remember that, Richard?
No.
I'm sure
there was a Dawson Pies.
There has to be, doesn't there? Maybe Gelders, like, did them out of it. They, like, dominated the pie market.
Pie war.
There was a big pie war. The Gelders reign supreme now across the streets of Sunderland.
What have seagulls got to do with pies?
I said throwing away pie crusts at half-time, sweeping in, eating crusts. Sorry.
There we go.
Yeah, so more the fool you for not understanding.
I think we've done well against 40.
Because Richard doesn't leave pie crumbs, neither do I, to be fair. So. No. There's never a pie crumb left for a seagull when I'm around.
The ones at Bradford weren't great, were they? What do you think was all right?
It was all right, it was his favourite. He recommended it, didn't he? He was like, "Oh, I always have these, mate."
I wasn't too impressed.
Just, you know, to pie. Don't get too excited.
45 minutes we've done, and I'm quite pleased with that, considering I wasn't at the game. We drew 0-0. There wasn't many talking points, so well done to everybody here. We'll be back on Thursday, as Gareth mentioned. We will have a question of the week next week again, because we're going to have some Aston Villa tickets to give away, I think.
We've got some Villa tickets. We've got, obviously, a hilarious question to ask, so get your banter hats on.
Yeah, banter. It's all about the banter.
I think we've jumped the banter shark, haven't we, really?
Jumped the banter shark, yeah. I would like to meet a banter shark.
What a banter shark.
I don't know. You brought it. You just invented it.
It would, like, come up from the deep and just be like, would just say something hilarious.
Just barrel in with the punchline straight away.
Maybe he's got like a vine on his fin, like a smartphone or a tablet.
Maybe if you're too direct and too offensive with your banter, he's a bit of a banter shark, that one.
A banter shark?
Yeah.
I don't know. So Keys would be the archetype.
Be king banter shark.
Takes banter too far. He's a banter shark, that one. Yeah,
just comes out last minute.
So we've got banter hounds, who are people who love it, who just like sniff it out, and then you've got people like him, who's attacks it from the deep, essentially. It's too aggressive. Well, what a dreadful end to the programme.
I know. If anybody's still listening, thanks for listening. Over and out.